Be Honest with Dr. Yana. Join me for honest conversations with experts. Get practical advice that will help you to better navigate your relationships and empower you to create meaningful and lasting connections. Fridays on United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM. Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are back on Be Honest with Dr. Yana on United Public Radio Network, 107.7 FM for beautiful New Orleans. And it's not that dark today there, right? It's pretty sunny. So today we have a fantastic guest with us, Dr. Elliot Van Dusen. He's going to be honest with me today. And he does not need any introduction because most of you guys already know him. But for those that don't know Dr. Elliot, he is a criminologist and parapsychologist. He also completed 15 years of service with the Royal Canadian Mounted Police before retiring at the rank of a corporal. Dr. Van Dusen spent his policy career specializing in major crimes, homicides, sex crimes, and drug enforcement. He currently serves as the Director of Paranormal Phenomena Research and Investigation. Dr. Elliot is pretty famous on TV, on media, on podcasts. So we are going to talk about his toxic relationships today. Not necessarily all, but welcome, Dr. Elliot.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you here today.
I know. I've listened to your show before, and now I can't believe that I'm on it.
Now, you're going to have to be honest.
For sure.
Yeah, we will be talking about toxic relationships, what they are, and how to get out of them or to manage them. If you're not able to get out. So, well, the thing is, what I've realized, Dr. Elliot, over the years, that it doesn't matter what our educational background is, what our emotional intelligence level is, despite or so many factors in this life, we can end up in toxic relationships.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, anybody is susceptible to landing into one of those. And sometimes you don't even realize that you're in it until you're out of it and can reflect upon it.
Until you're out of it, right? Hopefully it's not too late. Yeah, toxic relationships, everybody knows about them. Every single person has been there, and navigating them can be a daunting and emotionally draining experience. Then whether it's a friendship, romantic partnership, or familial bond, toxic relationship that can erode our self-esteem, cause huge stress, and hinder personal growth. But I think it is very important to recognize and address toxic dynamics because that is very essential for maintaining our mental and emotional well-being. So speaking about the strategies on how to do that, is absolutely important because we think a lot of the times that we are not in toxic relationships, that things do happen. People are people and they are just humans. So we give so many excuses. We excuse our own behavior. We excuse the behavior of our partner. But do you think we should be excusing them? Where is the line, Dr. Elliot, between our good nature of giving people second chances, loving them, because we talk about unconditional love so many times, and if love is conditional, then it is not love. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's really hard when you're in the mix of things. I know one toxic relationship that I can think of that I was in. I had been introduced to this female that was a coworker, sort of a coworker, not in the like the exact office, but the same organization. And we ended up talking. I was single at the time, and developed a relationship that was long distance. And we ended up going on a date when she came home, and things went really well. You know, we both had a great time, went out for a great meal, great conversation. Both wanted to see each other again, so we can continue to stay in touch. And we ended up discussing being in a relationship, and she didn't want to put any terms on it or any names on it, which I was okay with, having just, you know, gotten out of a marriage. I was with that woman for 10 years, and I was married for, I guess almost 10 years as well. Maybe eight. And, well, you know, I wasn't opposed to not putting any labels on it, but I started to notice a few things, after a while. Like, I noticed that when you would tell a story, the other person would try and like top that story, with something, you know, that happened in their life. I also noticed, a lot of things seemed to be kind of like almost like a poor me type syndrome. And no matter what you would say to try and help that person, it was always just like, you know, they were so hard done by. And then what really kind of sunk home for me after a while, I will admit, I was still kind of like wrapped up in the toxicity, but there was a couple times that they had flown home and they couldn't make time to meet up, not even for like a cup of coffee. And to me, that was just so foreign, because I know when you're developing a relationship with somebody and you're courting someone, you know, if you really want to see them, you'll make time for them. And, you know, she'd flown all the way across the country. We talked every day for hours on text, and she couldn't even make time to have coffee. And so those were like huge warning flags for me. I started to think, like, you know, does this person have a narcissistic personality disorder, with the fact that they like to always top things up and top your story off? And it really bothered me that they didn't want to make, you know, time for me. Like, I was willing to, you know, travel out there to see them. I was willing, you know, to drop whatever I'm doing to go for a cup of coffee, you know, make arrangements, anything like that. And they couldn't be bothered at all. So I think the icing on the cake was the second time that, and I had flown out there after that happened. So out there, we spent a lot of time together. Things were great while we were together. Flew back home, you know, continued to talk. Still noticed kind of the, you know, the woe me kind of attitude, and the, you know, like, again, trying to top your stories anytime you'd ever relate some of your life experience to that person. And they had come home for Christmas one time, and they were home for like 2 weeks. And again, we had made a couple plans to try and go for dinner and coffee. And it was the same thing. It was, you know, don't have time, I'm doing things with my family. And we ended up getting to like a huge, massive fight on Christmas Eve. And we kind of like called it quits at that point. And I remember she had sent me a text on Christmas Day, like saying Merry Christmas. And I didn't write back. And then it was maybe a couple days later, finally got like another text from her. And she was, you know, trying to explain her side of the story and trying to, you know, kind of patch things up. But I had already kind of moved on to what would become another toxic relationship at that point. You know, at the time, I was really giving that person a lot of this. Because I really liked them. And I know in hindsight, I had given them way too many chances. There was just so many different red flags that I would purposely ignore. And yeah, unfortunately, you know, I ended up wasting for a year of my time.
A year?
Yeah, over a year of my time, you know, courting this individual. Before I finally
individual
before I finally cut it off, you know. And it was, I remember it was a big fight on Christmas Eve through text message.
This is so interesting that you were talking about it, about the narcissistic personality disorder. Although it's the disorder itself is a pretty rare thing. And why is it rare? Not because it doesn't exist, but because narcissists don't usually seek any treatment. Who would be with such grandiosity, right? And I'm always right. However, a lot of people, they exhibit narcissistic traits. And I can see just the classical case of narcissistic behavior. You know, so you were in one for a year. Narcissistic relationships, they typically involve a person who exhibits narcissistic traits, like dominating, manipulating for their own gratification and needs. And it can happen in various relationships. And now it wasn't romantic, a partnership, of course, but it can be in friendships, in family, even professional dynamics.
Yeah, there was, I did notice like a lot of the characteristics of narcissism. And, you know, like there was certainly the grandiosity where self-importance for that person was evident, it like oozed out. A little bit of need for admiration, wanting, you know, to be complimented and have positive feedback given to them. Definitely, you know, a sense of entitlement, especially occupational wise.
But did you know about narcissism before you started that relationship?
No, actually, I didn't until I ended up learning more about it during my master's program. And then I could see, like, you know, there was the lack of empathy, really, overall. Wouldn't really say exploitive behavior, but there was definitely, like, a lack of empathy, the self-entitlement, the need for admiration. A little bit of arrogance as well. Certainly she had interpersonal problems, both at work and in interpersonal life. A sensitivity to criticism as well. There was a multitude of characteristics that this person met. And it's interesting because I know a lot of women talk about narcissistic men that they've dated. But after that, looking back on that, like, I would say that that's probably the only person that I dated that I felt, you know, was probably a narcissistic female.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Exactly. So many women talk about men. It's because probably women talk more in general, and guys tend to keep everything inside and trying to analyze it and internalize it. But it is my understanding that the women, like you call them female, I did it a female. Women narcissists, they are, can be pretty violent in terms of emotional volatility as well. And they can be violent physically as well. And if we look at that, there's a huge prevalence in women, especially nowadays, who exhibit narcissistic traits. This is our society. This is the society in general promotes this kind of a behavior. And manipulation goes through gaslighting, emotional abuse, and different manipulation tactics, right, to maintain control and power of the relationship. So when you were talking about that, I've noticed that you mentioned so many traits. However, you also noticed that she was playing a victim. Mm. And victim is such a staple of narcissism. However, you know, it is our human trait to go and save people, right? It's a human trait and the desire and willingness to help other people, right?
Well, especially being a police officer.
Oh, yes.
That is your desire to help and save people. So,
and you were right there in the right spot. Yeah.
Yeah. And in hindsight, like I said, after, you know, being like going through it and processing the breakup and all the emotions attached to it, you know, I realized that, you know, it was an unhealthy relationship and that I deserve better as a person. And, you know, just kind of cut ties with them, wish them the best of luck, and yeah, just I decided I don't need like that kind of negativity in my life. You know, it's just life's too short to have somebody like that kind of drag you down.
You know, people go years with this kind of situation in their relationships, knowing that something is wrong, but not being able to figure it out, or having probably too low of a self-esteem to get out of the relationship. And 1 year, it's okay, you know, that and after that, you learn what it is. Interesting thing about the narcissism is not, it is not the, always easy to detect it at the very beginning, because there can be the stage of love bombing. You know, there is the honeymoon stage on both of the sides, right? But the beginning of a relationship with a narcissist, everything is great. Everything is absolutely fantastic. And like Dr. Romani says that one out of six people is a narcissist. So, and there's so many different kinds of narcissism, and they have their own variables. However, if we just know what to look for, what to pay attention to, we don't have to necessarily look for it. Otherwise, we're going to become paranoid and unable to maintain our relationships, right? We'll overthink everything. However, being smart, and knowing what to deal with, I think that is absolutely important.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. It's really interesting. I think dating is like an important process to getting to know someone. My current wife and I, Sarah, we love to watch, we call it trash TV, but it's Love is Blind, the series. And it's really interesting because they put like two people into, well, there's multiple different couple, singles on the show, but basically you speed date in these pods. You can't see the other person, so you're just learning about them through voice, and you're not allowed to really talk about like your physical appearance. And so you start to form emotional connections with the individuals. And then in order to meet them, you have to propose to them. So once they propose and they meet, and then they usually send them on a week's vacation somewhere tropical, which is not realistic because everything's being paid for. You're in a beautiful location. You know, there's free unlimited booze, and you can see them, you know, drinking copious amounts of booze on the show. And then, you know, they have to start planning for, they send them back to the real world. All the couples are from the same city, so they return them back to the city. A lot of them have to go back to work. Some of them have like a rented apartment, but others, they actually stay in the person's home or the person's apartment. And they start to, you know, you start to really see them clash after all that, because, you know, you kind of fell head over heels and had all those love chemicals dumped on you when you first met the person. But then all of a sudden you're in the real world facing real problems. And yeah, it's very difficult, you know, to do that.
And this is what happens after you're done with those toxic relationships. And then when you finally find your amazing person, this is the gift of life that comes. Where's Meadow? Let's see Meadow.
She just took off on me, the little devil. But you're right. Do you want to come here for a sec? Come here for a quick sec. Do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi, Meadow. Hi.
Yeah, no, you're right. But it was interesting because I said to Sarah, I was like, I can see why a lot of these couples at the end of the show, they don't end up getting married, because it's too quick. Some of them make the decision like to kind of continue dating afterwards because they did have like, you know, a legitimate connection, but there was a few things that they wanted to work out. Some of the couples actually ended up getting married and are still together. I think Love is Blind is in season 6 now. So some of them have been married for over 6 years, which is really kind of cool to see. But you could see how these people were jumping into like a serious committed relationship without really knowing each other. And once you're around somebody and you get to know them and you share all those intimate details, you know whether or not they're a good person, whether they're right for you or not. And I think that takes time. And I mean, with that being said, things move fairly fast. When I met my current wife, you know, we're happily married. We've been married for 2 years, but together for 5. Meadow will be four. So after a year of dating, we talked about having a child because, you know, Sarah was in her mid-30s. I'm 2 years older than her. So, you know, I was talking to her about, like, if you wanted a child, I'd be open to having a second child. I always wanted to have two children, two girls, which I managed to have two girls. I got Sophia, that's 14, and Meadow, that's four. So they're literally 10 years apart. So we made that decision. And then,
so you're a girl dad.
Yeah, definitely a girl dad. Yeah. And I go really easy on them. The moms are the disciplinary, for sure. Now, I said if I had a son, I'd probably be a lot harder on him because I know how boys are, and I find boys more rambunctious than girls. Although girls can give you a run for their money, too, sometimes.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. And they better. Right? They better.
But, yeah, no. So it was it moved, you know, fairly fast because within a year of dating, we were pregnant. I proposed to her. When my other daughter was home, we both kind of set up a little thing there. We tied the engagement ring around our Shih Tzu and tried to get him to go up to Sarah so that when she was patting him, she'd feel something on his neck. And it didn't work out exactly as Sophia and I planned. So we tried to push it along a bit. But, you know, she said yes. And then we ended up getting married, like I said, just 2 years ago. And we'll be married, I guess, 3 years this August. So time goes by quick. That was one that kind of moved, you know, a little bit faster, but it was great. Like, we get along great. We all have the same, like, long-term goals. We get along perfect. You know, when one person's having a bad day here, usually the other person picks up the slack and brings that other person up. And it's just a great teamwork and dynamic. So sometimes when you know, you know. And then other times when you're in the mix of one of those toxic relationships, you don't know, everyone else around you can see it. And it doesn't matter what they say to you, you know, you'll defend that person and come up with excuses. So it's really tricky, but I guess, like, the only advice I would have to any listeners is just pay attention. And, like, if you find, you know, things aren't right, if somebody can't make time for you, you know, something as simple as, like, go for a coffee and things like that, you know, those should be red flags and warning flags. Like, I've always done, you know, crazy stuff for my partners, like, you know, brought them a coffee at work or, you know, my, love language, I guess, is, what is the love language with acts? It's
words, acts of service.
Acts of service, yeah. So that's definitely, like, my love language for sure. That's how, like, I express, whereas Sarah's more physical love. So you know, like, just things like that. I think if the person not reciprocating in the relationship, that should certainly be a red flag, and try not to make excuses. I know it's hard. I've been in the situation myself. So, yeah.
That is so interesting because usually when people get out of one narcissistic relationship, they get right into another one up until the time that they learn. They learn their lessons, they know the signs and what they want, what they don't want. So did you take time after your last unpleasant relationship, toxic relationship, and did you give yourself some time to think about it or not?
No, like I said, I kind of jumped into, like, another toxic relationship because I had gotten into that one for a year, the long distance one for a year, which I knew was toxic. And I was just kind of looking for, I think, you know, some female companionship, really. And I had met somebody that I actually worked with. And that's one piece of advice I'll give people. And time and time again, I've seen multiple people get burned by this. Sometimes it works out, but you shouldn't date people where you work. You know, there's a saying for that, but we're live on radio, so I can't. Certainly that, you know, that's the case, because when you break up, things become very awkward in the workplace, and you know, it can affect your occupation and things like that. So I ended up, yeah, just kind of like hanging out with somebody and spending time with somebody that I wasn't like, I knew I didn't have that connection with. I just didn't have that like deep emotional connection. Kind of liked hanging out with them and, you know, going to hockey games and going to restaurants and things like that. But I knew that I couldn't see myself with that person. And so I had actually tried to break up with them a few times and dealt with a different toxic situation rather than a narcissist. I ended up dealing with somebody that just couldn't take the answer no. They didn't want to hear it. They would push harder. They would, you know, love bomb you. They wouldn't say no until finally, you know, I had to just sever the tie, as hard as those conversations are to have with people. And kind of turned into a bit of a awkward situation. I was being stalked by a civilian police employee, being a police officer. So it was a very, very wild situation. But luckily, you know, put an end to that really quick once the employers got involved on both our sides. And then I ended up, you know, just dating generally for a little while until I met Sarah. And actually, it's kind of funny. So Sarah was the last person that I had to meet on the dating apps, because I used Tinder and Bumble. I found Tinder wasn't that great. I don't know if it's literally because it's like supposed to be, or word on the street is that it's just like a hookup
app. For the hookups, right.
Yeah, but I liked Bumble because if you matched with somebody, the female had to message you first. And so they were obviously somewhat serious, because first they swiped on your profile to match, and then they took the time to actually send you a message. So I think I had matched with like six women on Bumble. And so like I went on dates with them and just didn't click with them. And then Sarah was like the last girl that I had to go on a date with. And I was kind of getting like dating fatigue. So after that, if that didn't work out, I was just going to take a break. And it's funny, because talking to her after the fact, she ended up having dating fatigue. And the only reason she had downloaded Bumble was because she had dated a few guys, didn't work out, had some crazy situations herself. And her coworker said, why don't you try this Bumble? And she explained the process to her. So she did. And I think she said she only swiped on a few people and had matched with like me and maybe one other person. And then, you know, we ended up going for a beer. And at that point in my life, I said, you know, I think I just want something casual. And she was looking for something casual as well. So we sat down, had a beer, talked for like 3 hours, found out we had a lot in common. We lived in the same provinces. We grew up in the same area. Didn't know each other, though. Hadn't run into each other or anything like that. And then after I left there, I said, oh God, I said, I think I might be in trouble. I said, I think I kind of like this girl. I was like, you know, definitely enough to go on a second date. So I asked her out on a second date, and it took her to the same place. We had another couple beer and some appetizers and got talking again. And then she started to wonder what my intentions were, because she's like, oh, that's weird. This guy wants to just have a casual relationship, but he keeps asking me out on dates, and he's, you know, not putting any moves on me or anything like that. So anyways, by the third date, we ended up talking, and I let her know that I think that I want to just be like exclusive and just continue to date her and see where it goes, kind of.
Oh,
thing.
I have goosebumps. Oh my God, that is just so cool.
And so she was feeling the same way after, you know, talking about it. She said, you know, when she first heard that I was a police officer, she's like, oh God, I can just imagine like what his personality's like, and you know, I don't think this is going to work out, but I'll give it a try. And then she said after the first date that she really enjoyed the conversation as well. So, and she realized that I wasn't like your typical police officer, I guess. whatever that means. I can probably assume, but So that's kind of how I ended up meeting Sarah, and yeah, I knew she was my person. Like, you know, I've had some ups and downs for sure since I've been with her, and anytime I'm down, like, you know, she does whatever she can to pick me back up, and I'm the same way. You know, she's having a rough time, do the same thing. You know, I take charge and do what I can to get things, you know, back to normal and her feeling good. And yeah, just a great team, and we're good parents, you know. Like, I'm pretty easy and flexible with Meadow, and she kind of does the discipline, and she's got no issues with that. Her background's human resources, so I always joke with her, she'd fire somebody on Christmas Eve and not bat an eye. You know, being in the business world, it's very cutthroat, so she makes a perfect disciplinary mom.
How interesting. Yes, you both of you compliment each other. My understanding that when you said that I was looking for something casual, and she seconded you on that, is because probably both of you were burnt before, and you needed to take time to learn the person, to find out what they are all about, instead of just jumping into the relationship, right? Because you got burned before. Mm-hmm. And I think it is absolutely essential to take your time to know what kind of air the person is breathing, right? What kind of words he's saying, what actions he is doing, right? So that if we don't take time, and you did, nevertheless, so you immediately knew that was her. Otherwise, I would have ended up in the same way. You know, you noticed, you told me that, it was not really a narcissistic breakup. It was the classical narcissistic breakup. Because narcissists don't usually let the people out of the relationship. They would go on a smear campaign. They would try to not lobbing at the very beginning of the relationships, but they will try to hoover you, meaning that they're going to come back. They will try to lure you back. And of course, they will promise the world back to you, right? Mm-hmm. That everything is going to be fine, fantastic, just come back to me. And the people, usually they get back to the same toxic relationship, hoping that it is going to change, that, oh, people do change, they say, right? People don't change unless they get themselves into such a horrible situation, face flat, somewhere at the bottom of the well, right, with nothing to live for. And only at that time they are able to change. So her stalking you and going out of her way to take you back, it is pretty narcissistic. But knowing that and seeing those kind of signs, we need to withdraw ourselves from the situation. And you knew on the third date that Sarah was your woman.
Yeah, it's like I said, after the first time meeting her, I was like, geez, I kind of like this girl, you know. I definitely want to go on a second date. And then the second date led to a third date, and then she, you know, called me out. She's like, I thought we were just gonna have like something casual here. So and then I was like, yeah, I don't think so. I don't think I want that. I think I want something exclusive. And yeah, no, it worked out really great. But you're right. Once somebody breaks up too, I find Sarah and I call it nosing through the trash. But I find people will start to reach out to like some of their exes or, you know, people that they know and maybe liked, but didn't necessarily like pursue before. And we've seen some people do that. A buddy of mine is just a mess, like a complete mess. I actually think I know for a fact, like he's a narcissist, but he'd make a crazy guest on your show. I doubt that he'd ever appear, but I often wonder, and I've talked to him, and I've said like, what's wrong with you? So what he does is he ends up looking for girls where their self-esteem's low. Usually they're divorced or single mom. They usually have kids.
In vulnerable situations.
They're very vulnerable women, absolutely. Maybe even just got out of you know, a long-term relationship or something like that. And he'll court them, and he'll court them by basically telling them exactly what they want to hear. But then once he's in that relationship, he ends up going on all the dating apps and talking to multiple different women and possibly even meeting up with some of these women. And I pulled him aside multiple times. I'm like, why don't you just tell people that you want like a casual relationship? Or when he was with a girl, Sarah and I knew that he was running around on her. And we said, why don't you talk to her and say, you know, hey, I want to be in an open relationship. And he said, well, because she wouldn't want to be in an open relationship. And I'm like, well, then there you go. You shouldn't be, you know, talking to other girls and things like that. And I just found out yesterday, before you asked me to come on the show, ironically, that the relationship he was just in for a year just ended. And I guess the girl that he was with had found out he was talking to like three other girls. And I was like, that's typical of him. Like, just that's like his behavior time and time again. He always is chasing the greener grass and it always self-implodes on him.
And how old is he?
Oh, he's 43.
And this is probably the behavior that he's going to exhibit for the rest of his life.
Oh, absolutely. I've talked to my wife about that as well. We have no doubt that this is like going to be a continued behavioral thing with them. I've even like psychoanalyzed them because I'm like, you know, it's got to be like part of his upbringing. You know, the dad was an alcoholic. He was abusive. He's also an alcoholic for sure. He's got substance use disorder. I think he has that need to feel wanted by women. And I think that's why he reaches out to multiple women and then, you know, courts them and they, you know, reciprocate by saying nice things to him, because I think he has that feeling where he needs to be wanted. And he is just like a mess. Like, he's one of those ones that you don't want to meet on the dating apps. In fact, ironically, somebody we know had sent us a screenshot, and I guess on Facebook for safety dating women groups, there's like, are we dating the same guy?
Oh yeah,
California.
This has been really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are we dating the same guy, San Diego or whatever? And he showed up on, are we dating the same guy? And I was reading like all the comments in the screenshot, like from the women, and I'm like, that is him to a T. Like, I've known this guy since grade three. I'm like, that is, I know what they're saying is true, like 100%. And I do think those websites are great to give people a heads up in the dating game. I wish I had that about a couple people that I had run into.
You know, some time ago, I was asked also by my girlfriends, said, why don't you just post that person on that Facebook page, right? And see who else is recognizing him. Well, by that time, when I learned about it, it was already too late, and I met my fiance already. So I didn't need to put anything or even ask anybody. Well, the thing is that if you have to ask other people about your potential mate, then they're already, that's already a red flag. And that means that you don't trust that person for some reason,
right?
So when they told me to put the and that was just the beginning stages of us getting to know each other, and they said, why don't you just put his picture there? I think they removed that option after that. And I said, I don't need to do that. Because if you have your doubts, that means that you have to ask yourself, what are you doing with that person, right? Because you have to be honest with yourself, and not just honest with other people. You have to be honest with yourself. Otherwise, what is the use? I mean, like, yeah, it's good to know that, oh, other people, you're going to get that validation, knowing that other people also have gone through that. But nevertheless, is it going to make you feel better? Probably not. Well, we are, in fact, live from Saturday night. This is Be Honest with Dr. Yana, when you have to always be honest with me, because I will know. I had the training in deception through the body language, and I'm also a linguist, so it's pretty difficult to lie to me. Although I have had my moments, and I had to learn a hard way and the new things, how to detect the lies. But here with this conversations, we have to be honest with ourselves first. And you, for example, you were a nice person to start out with, right? You were not manipulative. You were treating women as ladies. And I know that, even if I don't live in Canada. However, it all that mattered is to find our own person. And you did meet Sarah, and that was fantastic. But you know what? That you knew what you wanted, what you did not want.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's a great way to look at like failed relationships. That's the way I've always looked at them, is that I've learned different things from all my previous failed relationships. And I almost look at them as like life lessons that you take forward, you know. So there's certain things that you know what to look for, maybe some, you know, red flags. There's certainly certain things that you will tolerate or know that you can't tolerate anymore. For example, when I was married, I did all the cooking, all the cleaning, the majority of the child raising, pretty much like anything to do with the house, I did. And it was funny, after we had separated, I remember I had to go back to the matrimonial home at one point, and there was a ton of garbage bags in the garage. And I was like, what is going on here? And she said, well, I don't know what to do with the garbage. You always used to deal with that. Like, had no idea that you have to look up when garbage pickup is once a week in your neighborhood and go put those garbage bags at the end of your driveway. Like, that's how
it was that bad.
It was that bad. So
how long did you stay in that relationship?
Oh, like I said, I was with that person for 10 years and married for probably
eight or so.
Yeah. I guess I started dating in 2001. Got married in 2006 and separated in actually 2016. So I was married for 10 years with them for 14 or 15 years. Yeah. So like at that point,
a long time.
Yeah. By the time we separated, I was with that person for like half my life. And so I knew like my next partner, I didn't want them to. I wanted them to be like somewhat independent, as in the fact like, hey, they can, if I'm not home because I'm away for work or whatever, they know how to bring the garbage down to the road or, you know, cook a meal for themselves or something like that. So like I said, you kind of look at some of those past failures and you take them as lessons. And I know it's really hard when people are going through breakups and things aren't working out because you think it's the end of the world and you've got all those like emotions happening and you're just like, oh, I'm never going to find anyone else. And you're just absolutely devastated. But I am a big believer in time heals everything, and it allows you to reflect upon things and you'll actually take lessons from it. So anyone that's listening out there that's going through, you know, a bad breakup right now, you just got to ride the storm, the stormy seas, as I always say. The ocean will calm at some point, and you'll see the sunshine.
It will, exactly. But let me ask you this question, Dr. Elliot. What made you stay in that marriage for 8 years? Well, it wasn't eight months, it was eight years.
Yeah. Well, 10 years for the marriage, now that I got the math right. So math was never really
that's why. Okay, 10 years.
That's why I'm a social scientist, not a hard scientist. you know what, Sarah actually had mentioned that. She said, you know, you were in a very toxic marriage. And at first I was like, what do you mean like toxic? Because I was thinking like toxic as in like fighting and stuff like that. But I'll never forget one time my first daughter, Sophia, had asked my ex-wife why we were breaking up. And then she said something like, were you guys fighting all the time? And I remember her mother said, no, actually, that was probably the problem. We never fought. Because like when issues would come up, we didn't really like address them, I guess. We just kind of like, I don't know, buried our heads in the sand, and which wasn't healthy. And it didn't really like resolve a bunch of problems. So after years and years, there was just like a whole ton of underlying issues that she had with me and I had with her. And yeah, it just came to a head one day, and neither of us were like extremely upset. It was just kind of like we made the decision to separate and gave our reasons, and I was okay with this. Like, you know, I felt like at peace with it. I'm like, I think you're right. I think it's time to go our separate ways. And you know, of course, when you're hashing out your separation agreement and divorce, things can get a little spicy then. You know, we had some good battles with that, but in the end, worked out good. We both co-parent our daughter, and yeah, we're actually this summer when we go visit my daughter, I think we're gonna have a barbecue together with all the family. So Sophia and her mom and her new husband and me and Sarah, and yeah, I think we're gonna, you know, get together and just be adults, and we've all moved on and we're all happy. So
well, let me know how it goes later.
I will I'll update you.
But it looks like in your relationship for those 10 years you failed on so many ways. I mean, not as a person, but in so many ways to even prioritize self-care, even set boundaries, right? You were doing everything in the house, everything, not even asking questions about it, because you were also busy as a police officer.
Yeah, that is one regret that I have. And I will say that to any listeners too, is that depending on what stage you're at in your life, it may have an impact on your relationship. For example, when I was married and had my first daughter, I was at the height of my career. I was on homicide unit. I was traveling all the time. I wasn't home much with my first daughter, like to actually raise her. Whereas my second daughter, when I had her, I retired that year. So I've been home with her full time. I'm like a stay at home dad that runs paranormal phenomena research and investigation, you know, when I'm not parenting. So two totally different experiences, two totally different relationships, two totally different you know, growing processes, really. Because like I think back and I'm like, oh, I missed a lot. You know, with being a stay-at-home dad with Meadow, I realized like I missed a lot with Sophia because of my career. But you know, at the end of the day, that was my career. That's what I was being paid to do. I was on a specialized unit that had expectations that you would travel, and you know, you don't say no to homicides. When you sign up for that unit, you know that that's what it entails. And there's actually an inside joke that every great homicide detective has at least one divorce. Just because it is demanding. Like when I was on homicide, I'd work minimum 60 hours a week, which most people work, you know, 35 and a half or 40 hours. And there was three times in my career I worked 127 hours in 1 week. And you'd just be exhausted at the end of that. But, you know,
being exhausted and then coming home and doing all the trash, all the cooking, all the cleaning and taking care of the child, that is not normal. Meaning that if you're saying that was a factor in you getting a divorce, perhaps that was not the major factor. It was not even a misunderstanding. Perhaps it was just unwillingness on the side of one partner to do any job. Because if you were coming home that late, your spouse was supposed to clean and cook, or because there is a child also involved, right? And know, for Pete's sake, how to take the trash out and where to put it. You know, this is absolutely amazing to me how good guys end up with women like that, you know, abusive and manipulative and kind of like sitting on your head and putting the feet down, you know, like riding you all the time, and they're taking advantage of everything. So
yeah, and like Sarah's completely different. Like I remember after we took over the matrimonial home that was left to me in the divorce. So Sarah and I took it over, and they had taken a light from Sophia's room, like a chandelier, and just left like wires, like capped off, dangling from there. So we just went out and bought like a cheap, you know, light fixture. And I remember Sarah getting a ladder, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" She's like, "Oh, I'm hooking up the light." And I'm like, are you able to do that?" And she's like, "Yeah, I think so." She's like, "My dad showed me, like, you know, when I was younger, and we had to do stuff like around the house." And I'm like, "Really?" I was like, "Oh, because I'm the type of guy, I can't even hang a picture on the wall." So anyway, she started to kind of second guess herself, and she called her dad, and she's like, "Dad," she's like, "I'm just installing like a light fixture, like, and this is what I'm gonna do. Like, does that make sense?" And he's like, "Oh yeah," he's like, "You can do that." And sure enough, she did. She hooked it up, and I was like totally floored. Number one, because you know, I had been married for 10 years. That wife certainly couldn't do something like that. I couldn't do that because my dad wasn't a handy guy. Never did I see him fix, you know, anything growing up. He just wasn't that type of guy. So I had no skills. And then I see Sarah, she's changing lights. The house that we bought here is 100.
Building shelves.
She builds shelves.
Fixing everything, paints. She does lays out floors. I was just going to make a joke, but she actually does lay
she
floors.
She lays floors. She does shelves. She paints. She's going to totally reno our downstairs bathroom. I call it a prison bathroom because it reminds me of a jail cell. It's just like it's a very small old room. You know, it's a 110-year-old house, so you can probably Google images of like bathrooms back then. Very, very small. Just has a toilet and like a pedestal sink. And she's going to totally gut that and reno it out. So, and she's totally capable of doing that.
The interesting thing that Sarah... Sarah did not really need a man. She was able to do everything herself. She wanted a man.
And I tell her that all the time. I say, like, if something were to happen to me, I am actually like at peace that I know you'll be okay. Because before me, like, she would take her car to go get maintained. Mm-hmm. I know she can cook because on the weekend, like I cook during the week just because she works full time. And when she comes home, I want her to have supper ready. On the weekend, she takes over that. She cooks on the weekends. So I know if something happened to me, like she would be totally capable of like looking after Meadow and looking after the house and stuff like that, which gives you a lot of peace. Cause like, I know there's some people, that are together and it's like, you see if their spouse passes away, it's like that person's going to have a rough go.
I have seen so many women like that. It is so interesting to me that you, chose a woman completely different. 180 degrees different. Some people say 360 degrees is like coming back to the same thing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I used to say that too. And then I realized, I'm like, wait a minute, you're at the same starting point.
Exactly. So 180 degrees opposite, like a totally different woman than the one that you used to have. And that is what matters. Interesting thing is that in my life, this time with my fiance, he is absolutely different from anyone that I ever had before, especially from the previous relationship. Without going into details, just want to say that when you know this is your person, then you know. And we have to be able to listen to our intuition as well. What is also important is that we usually know at the beginning when we just meet the first few minutes of our times on really deep subconscious level, whether we like that person or not, whether there's something wrong about the person or not. We do know that, but when we dismiss the flags, red flags, and for different reasons, we stay with these people, overlooking all of these problems and staying with them for longer than we're supposed to by hurting ourselves, hurting our children. Because I even know that my ex-husband also told me, he said that you will never be able to survive without me. Well, I did, and I moved to California from Missouri, and I did, and I'm thriving here in San Diego when other people are not able to do. But the thing is that when we are placed in a situation when we have to prove something, for example, to us or to other people or to survive, we do unimaginable things that probably you could not expect from yourself before. But then you do it because you have to do it for the sake of your children, because if you stayed in the relationship with your previous wife, then Sophia would have suffered. And now she can see the example of your beautiful behavior with Sarah. And she will mold her future relationships, hopefully, on the image that she has of you and Sarah, you know, because it's absolutely easy, because it is on a subconscious level that we choose partners in the dynamics in our relationships based on what we have had before in our childhood.
It's so true. And just to back up that with a real life example, what you said, so Sarah's sister separated and wasn't married, but was common law. So, you know, did up a separation agreement, pretty much like a divorce. And I remember my niece had come over for dinner one day, and all of a sudden, like halfway through dinner, she's like, "Is this what you guys do at dinner all the time?" And we're like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "Well, you guys are asking about each other's day and talking and all that stuff." And we're like, "Yeah, what do you guys do at dinner?" And she's like, "Well, usually mommy's just yelling at daddy and daddy's yelling at mommy." And yeah. I was like, wow, like, you know what I mean? Like that really kind of hit home. And it's exactly like what you said. Kids are going to look up to their models. And if things are not good in the home, you know, hopefully somebody takes that step to call it quits if, you know, the relationship's toxic and get out and get into a healthy one, because they will be looking for that. And you often see, I saw it as a police officer, that cycle of abuse, or that, like you said, that cycle where somebody goes for the same partner over and over and over again. And it's just the same result at the end of the day.
Because all of that is subconscious. And for girls, for boys, it's very important as well. But for girls, it is also, if there is a toxic relationship, that they will know that what not to tolerate when they look for the partner, when they are in a relationship later on in life. And so the same goes for the boys, because women can also be abusive. Now look at yourself, a great, fantastic man, and who was, in fact, that was a huge emotional abuse, and Sarah was right. It's just that when we're so busy, when we don't even have the time to slow down, like when we come at the end of the day, we like fall flat onto our pillow and sleep because we need to catch a few hours of sleep, then we don't have time to even think about it up until something dire happens. It's like, I cannot live that way anymore. A lot of people are in that situation when they are not able to get out or they can't do anything about it. And then they end up in a really bad situation, and years go by and they figure out, you know what, my young years went by and I'm unhappy, and this is already too late.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just thought of, you know, two other things too that we do. So every morning Sarah gets up at 6:30 for work, and you know, I don't have to get up at 6:30. I would have to get up when Meadow wakes up. But I always get up when she gets up, and we have coffee together in the morning, and we discuss either future plans or how her work's going to go, or what I have on the go for PPRI. And you start to like look forward to stuff like that, because I know when I've been away for PPRI work, she'll text me and say like, "Oh, I miss our morning coffee chat together," and things like that. So you have to set those couple, you know, those kind of couple bonding things together, and you know, have that kind of healthy relationship. And yeah, there's just a lot of toxicity out there. So hopefully, if you start recognizing the signs, you run for the hills. And I know, like I said, I know it's hard. You get blind. But yeah, you just, someone's got to make that decision to get out.
Someone must, and we have to know the time when to do that. We have to recognize knowing when to go, you know, because despite our best efforts, some toxic relationships can be beyond repair. And it's absolutely important to understand when to get out. And unfortunately, many of us stay there. But those who get out, it is a heroic journey. It's a journey of a hero. So, navigating toxic relationships usually require courage, self-awareness, and resilience. I would build that resilience, of course. You for sure did. For sure, Dr. Elliot. So for sure, by recognizing red flags and setting healthy boundaries and then prioritizing your own self-care and seeking support, knowing when to let go, we can protect our own well-being, our lives, and foster healthier connections, because we must understand that as human beings, we, I don't like the word deserve, because we don't deserve anything in this life, right? Deserving something, meaning that someone has to give it to us. We don't deserve anything, right? In this lifetime, must be able to have healthy relationships in order to be happy ourselves, and in order also to fulfill ourselves as human beings and our purpose as well. So without that supportive spouse, supportive partner, I don't think it is possible. And I am so happy that you found Sarah. I'm so happy. Sarah is such a great woman, and for everything that she does and for the way that she loves you and the way that she supports you, I can see that you have a loving relationship. And not only that you do, you know how to maintain it.
Yeah, it's been great. Like I said, if I'm having a down day, she'll pick up the slack. If she's having a down day or she's, you know, exhausted from work, I'll pick up the slack. It's a good teamwork. You know, she takes an interest in what I do. She's part of PPRI. She does our finances for us, you know, attends some of my events and helps like sell merchandise for the nonprofit organization. So it's great. You know, couldn't ask for a better partner.
Well, I admire you guys, and I'm so happy that this story is continuing. It started, not just that story, that the toxic story ended, and the new one, healthy, had started, and we're all capable of doing that.
Oh, well, God, me too.
Yeah. So I'm grateful to you, Dr. Elliot, for joining us today and sharing your fabulous stories with us, because we need to know that we are not alone in our journeys, and other people are going through that as well, because that is very therapeutic. So thank you for that. I know that it caused some unpleasant memories to surface, but you dealt with them before. You are a psychologist.
You're going to get the sage out after this.
Yeah. So thank you for joining. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. You were live with us on, I was going to say Science and Paranormal. Science and Paranormal is another podcast that Dr. Elliot and I host. Please check that out. We connect science to everything that is paranormal. So join us on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock Pacific time. And then what time is it? 10 o'clock. What is this?
10 p.m. Eastern time.
Eastern time. So
yeah. We always have some great conversations on there as well. So yeah. If you like the dynamic on this show, yeah.
That's right. We just don't discuss relationships there. We discuss the relationship between the science and other things, such as hypnosis and sleep studies and paranormal apparitions and everything of that sort. So come check this out. Well, thank you for being us today. We are concluding our fantastic conversation. So join us next Friday at the same time for another great conversation. You were live with Be Honest with Dr. Jana on United Public Radio Network 107.7 FM. Have a fantastic day.
Bye. Take care. Thank you.
Take care.